When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
I'm asking you about whether or not you think the government is right when they say that they will walk away if they don't get a deal by October the 15th. And would we realistically be having a good outcome if that were the case? We'll be talking about that in just a few moments. I'll get to more of your tweets. First up, let's talk about it with George Eustace, the Environment Secretary. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Now, you are launching today a new communications campaign to provide EU-based businesses with information they need to get ready to trade with the UK after the 31st of December. How can you launch a campaign when you tell people what to do after the 31st when we don't know what the situation is going to be after the 31st of December?
Well, there are certain things that we know will be needed, whether we get a further agreement or whether we don't. So, for instance, businesses need to know how the UK border will in future treat goods coming in. And we've set out our approach on things like agri-food, that there'll be some administrative checks and requirements starting in around April on those sorts of products, and with some physical checks starting from July. So businesses need to understand what type of export health certificate they would need and how to get one. And the same is true on things like customs. Whatever type of agreement we have, they know there will be a need for some type of export declaration around customs as well. And they just need to understand what will be needed, whether they are exporting to the UK or indeed importing goods from the UK and abiding by the EU procedures.
There is some concern that obviously things have gone to a stalemate between Michel Barnier and Lord David Frost, our negotiator, and the eighth round of talks starts tomorrow in London. But there's big issues, ongoing issues about our fishing rights, fishing quarters, and also over UK state aid after leaving the EU transition period. Are these sticking points where the EU are just being totally and utterly unreasonable, and if they don't budge, we have no choice but to walk away? Or is there actually room for some sort of negotiation here? Do you think this is just, this is kind of an end game now, or do you think there is some way of resolving this?
Well, I'm afraid to say that the differences at the moment do still remain quite fundamental. It's not just that we're in the final bit of tidying up at the end. We've gone into this negotiation really saying we're not going to ask for anything remarkable or special. We're going to accept that the EU find it easier to do agreements that are similar to ones they've done before. And so the model we were following is the EU-Canada Free Trade Agreement that has close to zero tariffs on the vast majority of goods. And it also has, administrative arrangements in place as well to reduce, what's called the non-tariff barriers. And we thought that was a good model to follow. We accepted that it would mean exporters to the EU would need to fill out paperwork, that there would be some checks at the border. We accepted all of that because we see that if that's the price of becoming an independent country again, well, so be it. But I think what's difficult is that the European Union, seemed reluctant to engage on a sort of discussion on a type of agreement that they were willing to do with Canada. And that's obviously quite problematic. And, what we can't have is a situation where we are still effectively bound, by, EU laws, potentially with the EU court having a role in that. And also where we leave the EU and don't have control of our fishing grounds. We just want an agreement a bit like Norway already has. We don't think that's a remarkable thing to ask for.
Except we do have the difficulty of Northern Ireland, don't we? And there's some concern that later this week, there's going to be the publication of the Internal Markets Bill, formalising trading rules within the UK. And that this, to all intents and purposes, rips up the withdrawal agreement signed by Boris Johnson with the EU last year ahead of Brexit at the end of January, effectively allowing, I suppose, a special situation for Northern Ireland where they come under the auspices of both UK law and EU law. Can you clarify what's happening there? Will there or won't there need to be customs checks when goods travel between Northern Ireland and the mainland of the UK?
So, look, the first thing to say is we are absolutely committed to the withdrawal agreement, and you know, even the Northern Ireland Protocol. You know, although that you know, causes some issues for some in Northern Ireland, we're committed to this. We've been working on delivering them. Some of these things are quite controversial, so we've already agreed that we will put in place some checks on agri-food goods, for instance, going through Belfast and the port of Larne as well. And we're working with the Northern Ireland executive on how best to do that. What we're really saying, though, is in that Northern Ireland Protocol, it was always envisaged that there were still finer points of detail to resolve on a few issues like customs and export declarations and certain things around fishing, for instance. And there's a joint committee process that is working through those. If at the end of that joint committee process there remain a few loose ends, well, we just need to be able to provide some legal certainty and clarity. And that's what the UK Internal Market Bill will deliver. And we've also always said that we will give unfettered access for Northern Ireland businesses to the GB market. And the bill that we're going to be publishing later this week will also do that.
But again, of course, then you have to have customs checks often going between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, which creates problems there. We know that the Irish Foreign Secretary is already very concerned about this. He's already said that this wouldn't be wise, in his words.
Well, he doesn't obviously know what we're proposing, because it won't be published until later this week. And I think when he does see what's being proposed, probably, reassure him. What we're really saying here is that if there are a few remaining loose ends that have not been possible to resolve through that joint committee process, and Michael Gove's making some good progress on that front, but if there are remaining loose ends, obviously, we have to be able to provide some legal certainty and clarity in that in that space. And look, we've also, as a UK government, got a very special responsibility to the Belfast Agreement, to Northern Ireland, to the peace process. And so we have to make sure that the way this Northern Ireland Protocol is interpreted allows that peace process to continue and doesn't start to cause problems in Northern Ireland. And only we can do that. That's not something that obviously the European Union can do.
Okay. Last December, heading to the general election, all the adverts from the Tory campaign and everything that Boris Johnson said, he's got an oven-ready deal, ready to go. And now he's talking about no deal as a good outcome. Which of those isn't true?
Well, the oven-ready deal that we had was the withdrawal agreement. As I said, that is a deal. That is an oven-ready deal. We can leave on those terms and trade with the EU in the same way as Australia does now. But separate to that, what we also said is that as well as the deal that we already had in the bank and that was negotiated and that we're committed to, we would also work to add to that with a new free trade agreement and to actually have tariff-free trade and some other agreements as well on certain matters, similar to what Canada has. That's what we've been working on ever since we were re-elected. And, you know, in the usual way, the European Union have not been particularly quick at engaging on some of these things. And so it's proved harder than it needed to be, really.
Okay.
And what the Prime Minister has really said is we need to flush this out by the middle of October. There's not to be a further agreement. Businesses need to know that so they can plan accordingly. Okay,
well, I note that you're sitting underneath an exit sign. I wonder if any of that is a sign to us. Let's talk about Extinction Rebellion over the weekend, preventing printing presses from actually going out and delivering 3 million newspapers. There were long delays, particularly because they didn't like the views of the various newspapers that were being printed at those printing plants because they felt they weren't taking net zero and all of their other demands seriously enough. You're the Environment Secretary. Do you think Extinction Rebellion or any other group should be allowed to stop a free press in this country, whatever the cause and however important they think it is?
Well, I think that the aggressive tactics that some in Extinction Rebellion deploy on a range of things, disrupting public transport, blocking the roads, blocking newspapers from being printed, it's not justified at all, in my view. Climate change is a very important issue. Concern about our environment, and last week I was talking to you about plastic carrier bags. The public consciousness on environmental issues is at an all-time high. People genuinely care about it, and tens of millions of people care about it and act on it without feeling the need to disrupt other people's lives in this aggressive way. And I think, I'm afraid, that Extinction Rebellion therefore do undermine in some ways their own case, because...
Well, they haven't got a case, have they? I mean, they're an anarcho-Marxist group that want to go bypass democratic procedures to get their way. That they don't have a case. Are you going to have a word with the Home Secretary, the Priti Patel, one of your colleagues, and ask her to make sure that the police do actually take action so these people aren't able to take direct action and bully people in the way they've been doing?
Well, Julia, I know Priti Patel very well, and I'm sure she doesn't need any encouragement on this. I've seen what she said, on
these... Words are all very useful, and arrests were useful, but we still saw those printing plants seeing those delays, didn't we? I mean, I don't really see why it's beyond the wit of the police, and certainly the Home Secretary direct, that those printing plants are allowed to do go about their lawful business.
Yes, and look, the police, strike a difficult balance here. On the one hand, they do want to enable peaceful protests.
It wasn't a peaceful
protest. Long-standing tradition, that's part of it. But at the same time, as you rightly point out, where that peaceful protest ceases to be peaceful and is actually about frustrating democratic processes, well, that's a different matter. And I know that, Priti Patel will be looking very closely at these issues.
OK, just finally on the virus. And again, it's extraordinary to be saying that and finally, but it is a big concern. 3,000 people across the UK tested positive on Sunday, 50% rise on Saturday. Yeah, we've got a lot more testing, but we're seeing also an increase in the proportion testing positive, largely people under 50s. How concerned are you that this is the first sign that we are entering a second wave?
Well, we are concerned about this. And, Matt Hancock made that clear yesterday. This is a significant increase over the weekend, particularly around younger people. And it underlines the importance of people continuing to, practice social distancing, avoid gatherings in large groups, wear face masks when out. We want to continue the progress we've made on getting back to life closer to normal. But this is a reminder of the difficulty of doing this, and a reminder that the virus remains a threat.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Right now, delighted to welcome my next guest, Jonathan Ashworth, Labour's Shadow Health Secretary. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Good morning. Unfortunately, we're not talking about happy news. Almost 3,000 people across the UK tested positive for coronavirus yesterday. It's a 50% rise on Saturday. It's the highest total since near the end of May. How concerned are you about the rise in infections?
I mean, I'm deeply concerned. It's clearly a big increase. It's very worrying. It's a reminder that the virus hasn't gone away. We can't be complacent. So please follow the social distancing rules. Please follow the hygiene rules. Wear face masks. But it's only one day's data. So we have to see what's happening over the coming days as well. But the key thing is that we need the government to make sure that anybody who needs a test, if you've got symptoms, that you can get a test. And in recent days, we've had, well, a fiasco, really, of people being told to travel miles and miles to get a test because they can't get a test in their local area. So I'm asking Matt Hancock to, what is going on? Get a grip of this testing and come to the House of Commons quickly and explain what you're going to do to fix it.
So we know there's been a massive ramping up of the testing, but yes, in recent days, in the last week, there has been an issue. I wonder if a lot of this is down to the fact that an awful lot of people are getting tested. I know about 20 people who've got tested in recent weeks. Either they've come back from holiday on the quarantine, kids were going back to school, they were going back to work. We're hoping today is the big back to work day or back to workplace day. And so a lot of people probably getting tested who would not normally get tested, in which case there may just be this one, you know, particular period when we're getting extra demand. But that also has led to this increase in the number of infections. But given the huge increase in the number of tests compared with where we were, say, back in May, there may be nothing to worry about. If it's young people getting infected who often don't even show any symptoms at all or very, very mild symptoms, as long as they, and this is the big proviso, don't come into contact with people who are elderly, who are shielding for health reasons, is there anything to worry about?
Well, I think if you drill down into the figures, it looks like a greater proportion of people are getting the infection rather than it just being a straight numerical increase, because you're quite right. We do have more testing capacity than we did back in April, for example. This does appear to be amongst younger people at the moment, but some of the evidence from other countries around the world is that it starts amongst younger people and then it begins to climb up the age brackets. However, there isn't any inevitability about this. It's not necessarily like, oh, you know, predicting the weather. To a certain extent, this is in our own hands. If we can ensure that everybody is doing the proper social distancing and the mask wearing and the hygiene, if we can make sure that everybody is doing that and following those rules, then we can get on top of this virus again. So there's a responsibility on all of us, a responsibility on government politicians to make sure people can access testing, responsibility for me as an opposition politician to, yes, push the government to go further, but to also encourage people to follow the social distancing rules. And there's a responsibility in all of us as members of society to not be complacent, to not take things for granted, and to do all the things which are very difficult. I appreciate they're frustrating and annoying and irritating, but we have to carry on doing that in order to get on top of this virus.
There is a lot of concern, particularly about universities returning. We know, I mean, the evidence for schools returning and the risk to the pupils and indeed teachers is actually very, very minimal. And children actually may be safer at school than at home, interestingly, in the latest research. But universities returning, we know the vast majority of the uptick in infections is people in their 20s, probably been going out partying, not social distancing, much easier for them, of course, to be out and about. Is that going to be a big issue? Is that something that we think we should be keeping a watch on? And do you think that, say, increased testing, say, testing once a week of everyone at university or the like, do you think that would be the answer?
I mean, I think we do have to keep an eye on it, absolutely. I mean, young people want to go to university, want to get an education, and, you know, we can't deny them that opportunity, obviously. But there are universities now introducing regular testing. I'm here in Leicester, and it just so happens that the University of Leicester are rolling out a scheme to test all students and all staff on campus. They can do that at the University of Leicester because they're a well-established medical school and they've got the laboratories, they've got the science-based research, so they've developed them themselves. I think they're looking at a saliva test, for example, and there are some other universities doing similar things across the country. So we do have to keep an eye on this because you're right, young people congregating, and you know, I remember what it was like as a student as well, so I know that
Congregating, is that what we call it now?
Yes, I did a lot of congregating. That's definitely what I was doing. We have to keep an eye on this. And I think expanding access to testing at universities is a really important intervention that the government should be doing all they can to make sure universities put testing procedures in place.
How concerned are you about, I mean, the front page of the Observer yesterday, COVID could be endemic in deprived parts of the country. They said that even with the lockdown, we didn't see the infections being cut. And of course, London, I mean, where I am right now, London saw, obviously, you know, the brunt of the coronavirus infections in the early weeks and the early months. And I think perhaps maybe to a certain extent, people may have taken it more seriously because, I mean, I know loads of people who had coronavirus, including myself. I know people who very tragically have died of coronavirus. So perhaps it's you take it more seriously. But there's quite a lot of evidence that even during lockdown, the virus was still at pretty high levels. Bolton currently at 98 cases per 100,000. Bradford 63 last week, 57 in Blackburn with Darwin, 54 in Oldham, 47 in Salford. By contrast, if you look at, say, Milton Keynes, they've just got 6%, and Kent it's 5 and 3 in Southampton. It's completely different in different parts of the country. And there seems to be this view that it's in deprived areas, particularly in the north and the northwest of the country, but also particularly in areas with a high ethnic minority population. There may be some concerns about, again, multi-generational living and people not social distancing, not following the rules. How concerned are you about that?
Well, I think what's pretty clear now is that COVID thrives on inequality and deprivation. And those areas where there is dense inner city housing, multi-occupancy housing, combined with low-paid jobs, often zero-hours contracts, or perhaps low-paid jobs in our sort of manufacturing base, which often these days tends to be food manufacturing. One of the big outbreaks we saw recently was in a sandwich manufacturing factory down in Northampton. And these areas where social distancing is difficult, and a lot of people, if they don't go to work, will lose out on pay. These are the areas where this virus has spread and it has been difficult to get it under control. Now, that shouldn't come to any surprise to those of us who follow epidemiology and health policy closely, because we always know that in areas of poverty, areas of low pay, areas of poor housing, that's where you tend to have worse health outcomes. So it's where we need to be putting more of our testing. It's why we need proper support for those who are asked to isolate. But it's difficult to isolate if your employer is not going to pay you anything, or if you live in a multi-generational household with lots of other people in the house. So this is why these social structural issues in society need to be dealt with. Okay. Otherwise, you won't get a grip of this.
Just finally, let's talk about Brexit. Boris Johnson's issuing a statement today. 38 days to do a deal with the EU post-transition, or the UK will walk away. And he says, look, no deal would be a good outcome for the UK. I think we'd all rather have a deal if we can have a good deal. If we can't get one, a good outcome. Do you agree with the Prime Minister?
I mean, it's not just that we'd all rather have a deal. He told us he had an oven-ready deal. You know, he put out pictures of his oven-ready deal in general election. That's what people voted for. And then Parliament voted for his agreement with the Northern Ireland Protocol in it. Now apparently, he's ripping it all up. And, of course, you know, the economy has taken a huge hit. Many people are anticipating huge job losses in the coming weeks and months as the furlough scheme comes to an end. It's probably why the furlough scheme should be expanded in certain sectors of the economy. To plunge the country into no deal in that context has huge economic repercussions. And I would have thought, given that we are facing in a recession, I would have thought we should be doing everything we can to agree a deal, and so we can grow the economy and trade without friction in the future.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Right now, let's talk about charities, because one of the actual victims of the coronavirus pandemic has been actually people giving a lot less to charity. They're not out and about. They're not passing people doing charitable collections in the street. You know, there's office collections, sponsorship and the like, the marathon. People simply aren't doing it. And charities have really lost out as people are being concerned about being furloughed, losing their jobs, and just really, well, worrying about themselves and their families rather than charities. charities. But this week is Remember a Charity Week. It's an annual event to raise awareness about giving to charity, in particular to spark conversations between friends and colleagues and family about leaving a legacy gift in your will to your favourite charity. So to coincide with this, a consortium of almost 200 registered charities are revealing that 100 Brits are leaving a dying wish donation to charity every single day. Well, let's talk about all of this with Len Goodman, former Strictly head judge, of course, and a long-time patron of Remember a Charity Week. Good morning to you, Len.
Good morning to you,
Good
Julia.
Morning. It is one of the really sad legacies of this pandemic and the lockdown is fewer and fewer people giving to charity. Loads of fantastic charitable efforts for the NHS. And we remember some of those very, very vividly during the lockdown. Really gave us a little bit of a pulling at the heartstrings. But it did mean that there was less money going to a lot of other charities. But this is a really important week when it comes to charitable giving, isn't it?
Well, you know, the thing is that Remember a Charity is all about leaving some money in your will. Now, obviously, you've got to look after your family and your friends and so on. However, if there's a charity that's close to your heart and you feel that you can, it doesn't matter how small it is, just leaving a little bit of money in your will is very, very rewarding. Also, you know, a lot of people haven't done a will. I have a friend who, back near Christmas, didn't leave a will, and the problems it caused. Yeah. So do a will, which is really quite a simple thing. And if you've covered your friends and family, then leave a little bit to charity. I think it's a marvellous thing to do. And when you think that 6 out of 10 lifeboats are funded by Remember a Charity, a third of cancer research is funded by Remember a Charity, money left in your will. I think it's a very rewarding thing to do.
Absolutely. And again, what's interesting is a lot of the charities do actually offer a service to help you make a will. And there's no obligation on you to give a donation to that charity, but I think it would be rather bad form not to at that point. But they offer the services. They'll give you a template of a will, so you can do the will really easy. You don't have to pay thousands to a lawyer. Most of us don't have that complicated a will. We want to make sure we leave money to our kids, and then maybe a couple things to a godchild or a cousin or something. Really straightforward stuff. But at the same time, just writing in a lump sum or a percentage to a charity. Really easy. You can do it, do it in an hour and then make sure your money is doing some good after you die.
Well, that's right. And, when I got asked originally to be a part of this, I hadn't left anything in my will to a charity. Mainly because I'd never given it a thought.
Yeah.
And, once they asked me to do it, I thought, well, I'm going to be a bit of a fraud if I do this and I've left nothing myself. So there's a few charities that are close to my heart that I've left a bit of money to, and I feel good about it, and I feel good about myself.
Yeah.
That I haven't just done some charitable deed that everyone can see. This is just a nice thing to do.
Lovely. Absolutely. Remember a Charity Week all this week. Just have a chat with your friends and family. If you've got a will, if you've not got a will, lots of us don't. One of the things my husband and I have been going through during the lockdown, and lots of people have been sorting out their finances, sorting out, the cupboards and the drawers, going through the paperwork. Ideal time to do it. Really easy to do. Just make sure you leave some money to a really good cause and know you're doing the right thing, which is wonderful. Can I ask you, though, before I let you go, Len, about this season of Strictly? I know you left a long time ago now, it feels, but it's really interesting to try and watch BBC pulling Strictly together at a time of social distancing, everyone going into bubbles, people testing positive for the virus, all very complicated. Did you think you'd have managed it this year round?
Well, who knows? I'm sure the BBC are going to make sure as much as they can that everyone is safe and sound. I've called up Anton Dubek the other day, and they're in lockdown working out the group dances and so on.
Yeah.
And he said, you couldn't feel safer. Your temperature's checked, you're checked for the coronavirus. And he said the way they're doing it is excellent. So, yeah, I think what they're going to do with the judges is maybe on their desk there's going to be one of those plastic screens between the judges so that that works. I don't think there's going to be an audience.
Shirley will probably be delighted with that. She won't be knocked off her chair all the time.
Well, unfortunately, Bruno is living in L.A.
Oh,
and
right.
he can't make it. That's what I understand. Oh. He's going to be a part of the show in some way, maybe via Zoom or some link. But I don't think, you know, at the moment, he can't fly from the States into Britain and vice versa. So, yeah.
It's going to be very, very different, this is. Well, you know what? We may need you back, Len.
Well, I don't suppose they would ask me. But obviously, if they said, Len, we're in deep trouble, Bruno's not coming, blah, 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 would you be a prepared? Yeah, and of course I would.
Good
I
man.
Would always help the BBC out.
He'd step up. Yeah. Love it. Glenn, absolutely. Look, I'd have you back quite happily. Len Goodman, always lovely to talk to you. Former Strictly Come Dancing head judge, of course. And in to talk about Remember a Charity.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.